From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Michelle Norris. The issues of money and influence in government are as fresh as the latest scandal and as old as politics itself. In our time, money buys power primarily by paying for election campaigns. That transaction often involves corporations and other big economic powers, and its roots trace back more than a century. As public radio continues its democracy project this week, NPR's Peter Overby reports on the evolution of campaign financing.
The defining image of late 19th century Washington may be a cartoon called The Bosses of the Senate. It's a panoramic view of the Senate chamber. Little lawmakers are stationed at their desks, and behind them, top-hatted moneybags figures arrive via a doorway marked Entrance for Monopolists.
That cartoon, it has a kind of handful of big financiers standing around the politicians controlling them.
Julian Zelizer is a political scientist who studies Congress and special interests. He's at the State University of New York in Albany. Zelizer says that 100 years ago, the political parties needed a new source of campaign money. Thanks to new civil service laws, they could no longer extract contributions from government workers. At the same time, corporate leaders were looking for more political influence.
So the weakening of the party system, which at the time was this progressive reform to diminish corruption in politics, creates one of the classic unintended consequences of opening up political space for these corporations to play a bigger role.
It was a marriage of convenience, and the best man could have been Mark Hanna, an Ohio politico famous for saying this: "There are two important things in politics. One is money, and I can't remember what the second one is." Hanna ran William McKinley's presidential campaign in 1896. His fundraising strategy was simple. He demanded that corporations offer up a percentage of their profits. McKinley went on to spend at least $3.5 million, an astonishing sum at the time, although in today's dollars it would be less than half of what President Bush will spend next year. This kind of excess led to a backlash. In 1904, a scandal involving $100,000 corporate donors tainted President Theodore Roosevelt's campaign. Pitchfork Ben Tillman, a South Carolina senator known for race baiting as well as populism, introduced a bill to ban corporate money from federal campaigns. Theodore Roosevelt signed it into law and returned to the issue in 1912 when he ran as a Bull Moose progressive. In this speech, he called the Democratic and Republican parties the tools of corrupt interests that ran an invisible government.
Behind the ostensible government sits enthroned an invisible government, owing no allegiance and acknowledging no responsibility to the people.
Corporations were also targeted by a new wave of crusading writers, often called muckrakers. Lincoln Steffens, Ida Tarbell, Upton Sinclair, and others exposed dismal working conditions and ruthless business practices. Decades later, Sinclair would look back and say the muckrakers' articles and books made a difference.
They reached millions of people, and I am sure they had a great deal to do with the changes which have occurred in our country since that time.
Corporate influence receded with the Depression and New Deal, but made a comeback after World War II. For decades, the campaign finance laws were, as Lyndon B. Johnson said, more loophole than law. Then came Watergate, with corporate money flowing in and out the back door of the Nixon campaign. Congress had already imposed mandatory disclosure of donor lists. Watergate reforms included limits on contributions, even public financing for presidential candidates. Again, Julian Zelizer.
Private money still influences politics, but there are some differences. For example, candidates are forced to reveal much more than they were back in the days of, you know, the Bosses of the Senate cartoons.
In our time, a more famous image than the cartoon might be the photos of Vice President Al Gore raising money from Buddhist monks in 1996. The Clinton-Gore Reelection Organization is the contemporary version of political money run amok, and Clinton's defense showed just how far money politics had come out of the Washington closet.
There's a race to get as much money as you can to keep from being buried by the other people and to make sure you can get your own message out, and at the edges, errors are made.
It's just as blatant on Capitol Hill. Earlier this year, a corporate memo surfaced naming several prominent House members as needing contributions if the corporation wanted to influence electricity deregulation. The House Ethics Committee declined to investigate. If the money cycle echoes back a century, so does the rhetoric of reform. Like Theodore Roosevelt, Republican Senator John McCain of Arizona was stung by a money scandal and then became a crusader for tighter laws.
The people whom I serve believe that the means by which I came to office corrupt me. That shames me.
The law McCain sponsored with Wisconsin Democrat Russell Feingold is now before the Supreme Court. If it survives, it will separate federal candidates, once again, from big corporate and union money. But no one expects it to alter the basic dynamics of Washington, of who gets in the door and who doesn't. Peter Overby, NPR News, Washington.